Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Microsoft Outlook Ask the Experts session, or the Unplug with the Outlook Experts section. My name is Alan Filish. I'm a product marketing lead. And sorry, I'm trying to stand over here so I don't get any weird feedback from the speaker.
The speaker.
That speaker, not the speakers themselves, yes. So today's session is one we've done the last couple, Ignite, and prior to that, Microsoft Exchange Conference, TechEd, and other conferences that we go to. Traditionally, throughout the week, we've had a wide variety of sessions on the Outlook family across all of our platforms, Windows, Mac, web, and mobile, as well as a lot of improvements to many other parts of our experience across people, calendar, mail, and everything else. And so we've announced a lot, and we've had a lot of time to discuss Q&A with you guys, but we'd like to open it up towards the end of the week and just have an open discussion. People can ask questions. This session will be really driven by you. We're hoping for some participation and engagement, so start getting your questions ready. We do have some nice 1 gigabyte.
1024 megs.
Yeah. Yes. Flash drives with Tony Redmond's book on them as well. You can read that, or you can delete it very quickly and use the rest of the space. Don't tell him I said that. Just want to recap. I think last year, again, just for context, these are very helpful for us. Like this entire conference, we were all having dinner just the other night and talking about how useful these conferences are. I hope you get as much out of them as we do. I know we walked away last year with a clear message around delegate and shared calendar experiences. We came back here and announced a ton of improvements that we're doing, and we can talk more about that if you guys haven't heard yet. We've also heard a ton, obviously, about our architecture for our mobile application, and we've, again, announced here back at Ignite that we're moving to be fully powered by the Microsoft Cloud for Outlook iOS and Android applications, and several other memes of feedback. I won't go through all of them, but the point is that we do hear your feedback, and we hope it sounds and it feels like we are responding to that. So these are very helpful. So with that, I'll have everyone go down the line and give a quick introduction, as well as just say a line or two about some of the things they presented or talked about while here at the conference. And then from there, if people want to start thinking of their questions, we'll start giving out some flash drives for the people who ask first to get us going. We have mics over there, so you can start to queue up too as we go through. So with that, Julia, why don't you get us started?
Hi, everybody. My name is Julia Foran. My name is Julia Foran, and I work in Outlook's calendar service. You might have seen me talking about shared and delegated calendar improvements, faster free busy, or the way that we're sharing our responses to meetings with even attendees, so attendees and organizers have the same attendee list.
My name is Eduardo Mello. I'm a lead program manager on the Outlook on the web team. You may have seen some of the announcements and demos we had this week in terms of introducing Focus Order to Outlook on the web, improvements with attachments, both in terms of being able to consume and send attachments more easily, but also integrate with third-party providers such as Box, Dropbox, and Google Drive.
Hi, everyone. My name's Nick Gay Breton. I'm the supportability PM for Outlook. I work with the product team to address top support issues. We're also working on a tool called the Support and Recovery Assistant to help you diagnose connectivity issues and other problems connecting to the service. Amir Hawk and I will be giving a session on that at 4 o'clock, a breakout session. So if you're interested in learning more, we'll do a little demo there. Please come by that session.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is James Colgan. I'm the Group Product Manager for Outlook on iOS and Android. As Alan alluded to, we're very proud to announce that for 0365 accounts, we are off of AWS and migrating everybody over to the Microsoft Cloud. We're super excited about that. Mostly because now we've got a whole bunch of engineers are freed up, and we can now focus them on delivering features and functionality to our users and your users. So other things that we've announced this week, we've put a ton of effort into enhancing our calendar functionality. And so you'll see a lot of advancements there. We're working on and are rolling out recurring events and support for that. We've also integrated with Skype for Business. So with OneTap, you can join a Skype for Business call from a calendar event. The list is very long. And if you've got a particular question or a function or a feature you want to ask about, I look forward to your question.
Oh, you're Hi, my name is JJ Kittis. I am the Group Program Manager for Outlook for Windows. I did the session 2 days ago with Julia and Alan on what's new and what's coming in Outlook. I hope the main thing you took away from that is all of these feature enhancements that you see us doing on individual endpoints, we're actually working hard to bring across all the Outlooks so that no matter what device you have, we can bring you the Outlook that you know and love on that device for both yourself but also for the employees in your company.
So I'm Robert Novinsky, I'm JJ's peer. I'm the group engineering manager for Outlook for Windows. Any questions or anything, I'll be there.
Can you bring your mic in closer?
I feel like I'm in a boy band up here. And Alessio. Yeah.
My name is Alessio Roig. I'm the group product manager for Outlook for Mac. The most important thing and most exciting thing for us is that for the first time we're here and we're able to announce that all the experiences that we announced and presented in the last 2 days are coming to Outlook for Mac at the same time as any other platform. So that is the indication of how the focus is going to be about Outlook as an ecosystem, not of Outlook as one endpoint and other points, bringing up the rear at a later point. That's definitely the most exciting thing for us.
Hi, my name's Victor Wang. I'm a PM for Windows 10 Mail and Calendar, so both on the phone as well as on desktop. I shared the session with James, and we were primarily talking about mobility again. Our announcement there was for O365 folks, we're going to be moving on to a new protocol that will allow us to deliver a whole new level of functionality and enhancements that you haven't been able to get via EAS, namely scheduling assistant, some of the tailored experiences that you've seen before, and pretty much at most of these talks. So, don't know.
Why don't everyone move first?
So I have two questions. First question is Outlook Mobile for iOS, shared calendars. Is that on the roadmap? Is that coming anytime soon?
I'll take it. So with the new shared calendars model, you will be able to get your shared calendar to sync to Mac, to iOS and Android, and basically anywhere you access your calendar. We'll announce in this quarter that if you share from the web and accept from the web, you'll be on that new calendar model, and then slowly all the other clients will start allowing you to share and accept to be on the new model as well.
Okay. Second question.
For Office 365 only, though.
Well, I kind of assume that. It's kind of the same thing we're hearing all week. With regards to Office 365, we're slowly starting our project to move over, and a consultant we're working with advised us that Microsoft says we shouldn't use 64-bit Office on our clients. And I don't understand why they would say that. Is that your guidance, that we shouldn't be running 64-bit Office?
I don't know. I'll look at Gabe, and okay. I'm not gonna gut check with people, but yeah. Like, I think the answer is no, that's not true. You should run whatever biddedness.
I've never had a problem with that. I've been running
whatever
it for
biddedness
years.
Works for you. I think the issue why sometimes we hear those kind of that kind of guidance is.
Yeah, I mean, our support stance has mostly been we recommend 32-bit.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be largely because of add-ins and integration.
That's what I was going to say. Like, if you have add-ins that are like
nope.
That you buy that are only 32-bit, but I think I'm looking at people like
yeah,
I run 64-bit.
We've been running it for years with our on-prem exchange, but as we're moving to the cloud, they're telling us we need to change it all to 32-bit, and I can't figure out why they would say that. So I was hoping you'd have an answer to that.
No, I mean, that's the main issue.
Okay. Thanks.
Click to run offers both 32 and 64. So.
Yep.
You over there? Yeah, we'll just alternate back and forth.
Good afternoon. With Outlook 2016, we saw authentication changes, at least when using on-prem environments with EWS and MAPI HDP, if they're not set to, if a client can do negotiate on EWS, but MAPI HTTP set to basic, that Outlook 2016 will not accept that as a valid config. Outlook 2013 and 2010 do and fall back to basic on the EWS connection from Outlook for Windows. Is there, was a set design change to not allow EWS on Outlook 2016 to fall back to basic if MAPI HTTP is set to basic, or is that possibly not a well-known issue?
That seems like a bug to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know on the EAS part. Alessio, have y'all heard that from Mac? I mean, I'm not familiar with Amir's in here. He might know. But, I mean, you can follow up with me after, and we'll get you an answer.
Yeah, that seems like a bug to me. Like, that off principles, like, between EWS and MAPI HTTP, those are all negotiated independently using, like, normal web standards. There is one bit of one nuance there, which is we try to cache what I'll call as the exchange credential to avoid having to prompt. And so it may be the case that if you have different principle, like the package that's set up to use between your EWS endpoints and your MAPI HTTP endpoints, then there could be an issue there. Not that it shouldn't work, but that I could imagine an issue there from that standpoint. But let's talk about that because afterwards.
Just two feature ETAs or whatever. Outlook for the Mac, when's Office 365 groups going to be there?
We're actively working on it. I cannot give you a date, but you will see it pretty soon.
Soon, okay. Yeah. And on mobile, any idea about categories or search folders, any of that stuff showing up ever, or is it just like... Not an option.
We never say never, right? But to be honest with you, we haven't looked at categories. And the second part was
search folders.
We haven't looked at that either. What we are going to be doing, though, over the next quarter or two is focusing on search in general, in particular two aspects of it. We know that just general performance, it can be improved, so we're going to be working on that. And then the other part of it is around the UX and the UI. So we want to be able to surface, without you actually putting in any search queries, the more obvious things that we think you're going to be looking for, just to make sure you're more efficient and effective within the search experience.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Will and when will S/MIME be available on all the other versions of Outlook?
So we're going to be looking at S/MIME early next year. There's quite a lot in S/MIME that we need to unpack, and so we'll probably be rolling out on a gradual basis, but we'll start looking at that at the beginning of 2017.
Back. S/MIME?
It's currently in the backlog, but it's not in the immediate future. So we'll have to look as a part of the ecosystem. We also starting to work a lot more closely across all the endpoints on lighting up things simultaneously. So one team's backlog is just not isolated. Some things might rise to priority in another team because we want to complete the ecosystem. I don't have a timeline or whatever for it.
I believe the rest of the apps all support S/MIME.
So I have one comment, one question. One comment is please don't forget about us that have to stay on premise and are forbidden to be into the cloud. We still exist, so we like to have all these new things as well. The second question is with Outlook and delegation, the online archive, you have to have full permissions to actually see it. So a administrative assistants or 10 of them for certain people because they need all the help they can get, have 10 people have 10 full permissions to someone's executive's archive. So if you could just delegate out, read access, is that an option? Is that something in the works? Or did I state that question wrong?
So are you asking if the delegates will be able to read the shared mailbox on other devices like they will for calendars?
No, to be able to get to see an online archive for someone else, you have to give full access read access. You have to have full permission, so you own it almost. Is there a way to correct that or a way around that, or is there any path forward?
I don't think we have any plans to change that right now.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi. Hello.
Also on-prem, so just referencing.
what we're running into, and I wonder if you guys ran into the same thing or how you addressed it, is we deal a lot with large distribution lists, and occasionally people forget to put those in the BCC, and then somebody hits reply all, and then a whole bunch of people hit reply all, telling them not to hit reply all. And it brings down our Exchange servers for a little while. And we're just wondering how...
That's never happened in Microsoft either.
How is there a better way? How can we address that? Either I'm a developer, so I can write something, or is there a feature in Outlook?
Well, yeah. Client side, there's a few different features. One is certainly reply, but hit the IRM button so that you cannot allow future reply alls. Of course, you still have the original message that you can reply all to. Excuse me. Other thing client side, I love the ignore button. I try to train everyone on it because you just hit it and then the rest of the world can move on and then you can get your work done. I think at Microsoft we try to lock down the permissions on the really, really large DLs so that that doesn't happen as easily. And I think we've even had some cases inside where people who have permissions forget and then we go and remove their permissions. Because obviously it's an embarrassing scenario for them as well.
I was just going to add on to the first point, which is, I want to make sure you caught that, was IRM. Are you familiar with IRM?
Yeah, no, I wanted a little bit more on that.
Okay, cool. Because note that has, click set permissions, do not reply all. And so that's how we manage the most of them, but yeah, more than just, yeah. Big DLs only have certain send as permissions.
That's right.
Yeah.
Another question. Okay. Do you have... since 2010, there's a feature called Mail Tips that actually, as you compose a message, tells you...
That was one of the proposed solutions, was the Mail Tip, but that's just going to give a red squiggly kind of thing.
So are you using those DLs primarily for announcements, or is it really a discussion DL?
No, it's just announcements. So we don't want replies.
The easiest way is to lock it down so that only certain people are allowed to send to the DL.
Yep.
That was a proposed solution, too, is to lock down the DL.
Yeah, or you can absolutely have it. You're allowed to send to the DL, but it has to be manually approved. You can do both in Exchange.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're trying to wrestle with how to give permissions, delegate permissions to the various groups that have DLs, and how to appropriate those permissions accordingly. We do a lot with distribution lists, so we want to.
Cool. Thank you for the question.
Yeah.
So I just want to address the previous gentleman's point as well as yours, just about on-prem in Office 365 and delivering of features to that. So just to start, as you see, obviously, as a company, we're really invested in Office 365 and delivering innovation quickly. That doesn't necessarily prevent us from delivering features to Exchange on-prem. However, as you've probably seen, so I'm probably being repetitive here, our delivery model now has moved to a position where we have, Exchange Server 2016, Office 365. We deliver updates continuously to Office 365, and then we'll point in time release features, sort of bundle that up and deliver that as another release of on-prem. So when you see us delivering innovation, not in all cases, but in most cases, a lot of that will come potentially in a future version. Now, the difference is, especially across the Outlook teams, a lot of our capabilities and features are moving more and more into the server rather than being done client-side. That allows us to deliver things as a family. Once the feature is done in the server side, and then the clients just have to support it from a UI perspective or other things, rather than having all that processing done on the client side, then that means you have to wait until next release of an on-prem server in order to get that capability. And so that's going to be something you're going to see quite often. Now, obviously, it's just the way the two models are going to work going forward. So, again, there's some things we've announced, like groups or what was Clutter, now Focused Inbox. Some of those things require the scale machinery and the intelligence that may not come on-prem, but many other things it'll be at a certain point in time before you're going to be able to access them. So we can address one-off features if and when those would come to on-prem or not. But I hope you don't take that as Julia's announcing a bunch of great calendar stuff. Like the focus on delivering that in Office 365, re-architecting that, delivering it to our customers, and we'll approach that with a future Exchange server list potentially. So just want to make sure you understand our general line of thinking when it comes to those.
And I know that this has been asked down at the booth a lot. Generally, for on-prem, if we do plan on bringing the feature back to on-prem, it usually lags the O365 service by about 4 to 6 months when you get that cumulative update with the new feature. So for those who like, hey, when is it actually going? The one exception is the ones that do require a lot of, again, service horsepower. And secondly, like, for example, O365 only protocols like the REST and AJAX for mobile.
Okay, my question's in regard to your mobile clients, whether it's Skype Mobile or Outlook Mobile. We, in our company, we deploy, we went from a corporate-owned device to a BYOD device. We separate it by a container, whether it's AirWatch or whether it's Good or whoever. We use Good, but what we're looking to do is I would love to use your Outlook client. I would love to use your Skype client on these mobile devices, but I need them to be put into this container area. Now, there's a consortium out there called the App Wrapping Consortium. Everybody's going down that way, but I did notice Microsoft has chosen not to join the consortium or do any kind of app wrapping whatsoever. Can you explain your reason why? And then I have a second question.
Okay,
well,
so let me unpack that a little bit. So a couple of the things you're addressing there, there's what we're doing with the app and then what we're doing with MAM and MDM and with AirWatch, Good.
Yeah, remember MDM, these are personal devices.
Right.
Most people do not want MDM being defined by the company's security team, which will tell you your password's got to be 8 characters, it has to be three different types, right? I don't want that on my phone.
Right. The challenge that we have on the client side is as you integrate with these various different security services, because they need to be digging in and looking at exactly which data is going to be going from Microsoft Outlook into Microsoft Word or apps into other applications. You want to have that control built into the app. We're integrating the Intune SDK. We're working very closely with that team. And as we move forward with our app, as we're adding new features, or the security provider, in our case, Intune, is adding features, having those two teams very closely integrated is very important for us to have the agility and the speed that we need to deliver these new features. For us to start integrating with other service providers out there, it's just more than we can take on board. And so if you want to be using Outlook Mobile, you really need to be looking at Intune and seeing how we can support the scenarios you're talking about using Intune.
And to layer on top of that, I think what you're looking for is an app-level container, correct?
That is correct.
That is what we call MAM, Mobile Application Management.
Right.
And that will be supported in Intune upcoming. It is on the roadmap.
But it's only going to be through Intune is your direction. You're not going to develop an API. You usually develop an API set for these vendors to plug into. Why the shift in the Intune? Usually, you don't provide a product, you provide a set of APIs for people to code into, to take advantages of your services, whether they're microservices, APIs, or whatever. Why the shift in the Intune?
So for Windows 10, I will say that as the Windows 10 ecosystem, not just for mobile, but also for desktop, they are supporting other providers. Obviously, we develop first and partner most closely with Intune. The other piece of that is we use Intune for O365. And so that has been a lot of our focus on making sure, again, the experiences against O365 are premier. And then I don't know about iOS.
For us, I mean, it's a matter of focus. You know, we've only got so many engineers that we're, and if you provide out an API for other vendors to write into, then you've got to support that API. There's an awful lot of overhead there. So, okay. I mean, we've been talking to a lot of customers while we've been here at Ignite, and there are a lot of users out there that are extremely excited about being able to use Outlook Mobile on iOS and Android. They're on other security vendor providers, and they're looking at ways to evaluate Intune and see how they can bring it into the corporation. So From our perspective on the client side, like I said, I'd much rather focus our engineers on moving the ball forward from a functionality perspective and really don't have the bandwidth to, I don't know about a change or a shift, that was probably happened before I came on board, but that's our focus moving forward.
Okay, my second question is, we're not geared like the other companies that spoke before me. We are committed to the cloud. We don't want to run data centers. We're out. We sell funds. So what we want to try to do is shift a lot of our stuff into the cloud. We're excited about going to the Office 365 cloud. We bought into the Kool-Aid, and we're drinking it heavily. Now, the only problem is I'm in an investment firm, Vanguard. We're big, we're a target, and especially even for regulators and governments. What I am noticing in my industry, not financial, but investment, there's no clients have moved over to your Office 365 cloud. What are you doing? I know with the government, you had a special program to get them to move forward. What are you doing about the investment areas? Are you thinking about any type of program to accelerate that movement?
I would really address that question to the 365 folks. They could better answer your question.
Although Alan might have some.
I don't have a depth question specifically for that industry. Like we've been continuing to iterate on two ways. One is specific regions and governments around the world and industries as well seem to end up having specific needs. And so where we've seen those needs be large enough to represent an opportunity for Microsoft, frankly, from a business perspective, we've been delivering data centers. So for example, the UK market, Canada, Germany, Australia, we've been starting to grow as those customers continue in mass to make, continue to move to the cloud and continue to show us interest. And we're trying to match that. Government as well, we saw a big opportunity there. And so we delivered a government specialized, special purpose data center for those customers. So we don't have anything specific planned for investments at the moment, but we are actively evaluating any opportunities, whether it's specific governments, specific regions, specific industries. I don't have a good answer specifically for you, but as they grow and they become a business opportunity, we've shown we're going down that route. So,
thanks. Thank you. And a great example of that, by the way, is things like with two-factor auth, you know, that we've been integrating those and multi-factor, other multi-factor auth packages and things like that into the clients and into the flows. Across all the clients, just to make sure that in those, you know, especially for people who are big targets, they want to make sure that they have 2-3, you know, factor auth going on.
Great question, by the way. Thank you for that.
Could I just reply to the gentleman that was talking about the large BCC scenario? We have a developer in-house who writes custom code within Outlook, and he generates pop-ups for users that actually have to respond to before they send certain messages. Large threads or BCCs, you can do something like that. And it's an extra step that a user has to take before they reply. So just an idea to consider.
Cool. Thanks for sharing.
Sure, absolutely. I'm not a developer, but I can put you in touch with him.
Make that an app. Put it in the Outlook and Office app store.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a very talented developer, so I don't know. But a question, this is more on the EMM side, but I figured I'd bring it up here. One of the concerns we have about the mobile client is in a BYO scenario, allowing a user to connect to multiple mailboxes, but have some kind of wall in between the data. Like right now, the users have the ability to commingle the data between their corporate account and their personal account. I was wondering if there's going to be a control maybe down the road where we can force the users to have to keep those views separate.
Yeah, so we actually do support that today with Intune. So with Intune, you can manage the corporate account within Outlook.
But you can't force, a user has the ability, the concern is that if a user has their corporate mailbox and their personal mailbox in the same view commingled,
right,
they could potentially reply to the wrong thread, and there's no way that you can force that view.
Sorry. Okay. I see what you're saying. So, yeah, if they use the all accounts view and they have a work email and then personal email, then a work email. Okay.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's something we're actively looking at. But at the moment, just for the rest of the scenarios at least, you cannot copy and paste, even within the same app, you cannot copy and paste between them, you cannot forward or start drafting an email and changing your from address or any of those things.
We've
handled a lot of the scenarios, yes. But yeah, there, it sounds like there's still an additional step we have to go on.
It sounds like you want to protect against user error, right, Pilot?
Yeah, right. We just want to keep the views separate.
Exactly. So we get as those of you, just show of hands, how many here are actually using Outlook Mobile on iOS or Android? Awesome, thank you. So we get feedback through user voice within app. We also get a lot of feedback from our customers and the users from our customers, and we also get it from user reviews as well. And we also do a lot of direct user research. And one of the aspects that we constantly come back is how do we operate within this hybrid merged life model where people are at work and they're on their personal time at the same time. And it varies considerably as you go across the globe, the different working models that we have. Some are very strict, 9 to 5, and after 5, it's my own time, and others are very, very merged. And finding a way to actually personalize the experience because we're looking for those people that want to have a clear delineation between my work model and my personal model. There are those that want to have the emails kind of next to each other, but I want to be very clear, this is work and this is personal. And various different other combinations thereof. And so we're, over the next, I would say, 3 to 6 months, we're going to be looking very, very closely at how to really help the user to maintain the efficiency and the productivity while they're using the app, but reduce the stress. Did I just reply to a customer about some information that was internal? How do we remove that stress and give the control or give the perception that the user is in control and they can have confidence, more confidence as they're using the app? So the challenge that you're actually referring to is more of a user experience challenge rather than a security control challenge. And that's something, like I say, we're going to be focusing on over the next 3 to 6 months.
All right, my question's in regarding unifying the Outlook experiences across platforms. Kind of a two-part question. Is there going to be any improvements, especially to the mobile apps or maybe the Windows 10 calendar app, to bring in some resource scheduling, particularly with conference rooms? Can schedule a conference room, but seeing the free busy and all that fun stuff isn't consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. When we introduce a scheduling assistant, the add room finder, add a room, will also be part of that experience.
Will be part of the Outlook mobile app as well?
Yes.
Excellent. And the second part is particularly with other integrations into Office. So one of the handy things about OneNote 2016 for the desktop is that you can dump your meeting details right into it from Outlook. Other than sending an email to me at me@OneNote.com, is there going to be any other integrations between Outlook and OneNote on other platforms to have that kind of functionality?
Integration between Outlook and what, sorry?
OneNote. Particularly with taking meeting notes, you can see the attendees, the subject, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, so we've been talking to that team quite a bit. And I would say, again, because we've been very much focused on that infrastructure move, our bandwidth is just starting to free up a little bit more. I would say over the next quarter, we're not going to be looking at that particular integration outside of what we have as we start looking at add-ins and seeing what we can use within the add-ins infrastructure and framework. So we've got nothing to announce yet, but that's one path that we can actually provide that integration either within the email experience or within the calendar experience.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Same thing for Mac. We're exactly on the same line as mobile.
Hi. I'm a long-time attendee, actually going down back to Mac and Ignite last year, and we've come to every session you guys have done and given you some good feedback, shall we say. I've actually got a ton of questions, so just cut me off when you've had enough, and I'll rejoin the queue and come back again. Some of just the easy ones, like it's on a personal one for me, and I know it's actually in, someone's put it into the voice. When you reply using the Outlook app, it uses a crappy font for the recipient, so people know you're replying from a mobile device. When you apply in Fat Outlook, you Calibri, it's all beautiful, nice signature, but you can't change the font, can you? Is that coming?
It's actually Outlook for Windows' fault. the other clients don't specify a font, and Outlook for Windows has a bug in our editor where if no font is specified, we sometimes trip back into
Times New Roman or Arial. Something like that. So we're working on that. Like that's a well-trod ground, and we hate it. And there's like signs in the hallway, which is TNR, Times New Roman.
Okay. And one other thing that bugs me that you can do in the iOS app, the native app, if I have for some reason a memo with a lot of font in it, and it's when you first open up, it's really small, it automatically zooms. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't happen in the Outlook app, and I'm like having to zoom in on my phone and take my glasses and.
Sorry, you're on Win10 or you're on iOS?
iOS.
Yeah, so with iOS and in Android, it's it can be a little bit worse as well. So essentially what we're doing around handling fonts and rendering in general, that's something we're constantly improving. I mean, it's just one of these things you just got to keep on chipping away at and chipping away at.
It's on the list. Okay,
is that?
Cool. Yep. I've got to keep going. Is it possible in Fat Outlook, or actually in any version of Outlook, I guess, to do RMS in place encryption when an email received? So someone didn't send it to me IRM protected or RMS protected, but actually I would like to RMS protect it directly in the client for me.
You're saying without replying?
Without replying. So like if I've got a delegate to my mailbox, they wouldn't be able to see it or act upon it. And re-in-place encryption.
I don't think so.
No. Ever been requested?
What's the scenario?
Well, the true scenario actually is in a notes to exchange migration. Actually, when you do a Lotus Notes, you're a notes user, you can encrypt email to and from a recipient. But to migrate that email, we ask them to decrypt the mail. Then when it comes back into Outlook, they've now got unencrypted email, and the reason they encrypted in the first place was to keep it from spying eyes who don't have their notes ID file, the public key, the private key. So they wanted a way to re-encrypt it in place once it's migrated. And I actually thought, well, it's not a bad thing. If I've got a delegate, I don't want them to see some of my data if it's my delegate. And I could mark it as private, but that's a whole another thing.
Just for you two, can you mark it as private, or is that only on the send experience as well?
It's only in calendar too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, you can mark a mail as private when you're sending it. That's another thing, because that's not in the same place. When you mark a calendar item private, it's on the ribbon, but that's not on the ribbon when you send email. You've got to dig further into properties to mark it as private, which a lot of people would like to do. So I move on to the ribbon, but which is not easy.
It's not supposed to be a security feature. I just didn't know if that was potentially a workaround is what I was trying to ask these guys.
But you got see the question, I guess? RMS encrypting it?
I think we understood the question, but I don't think that's available. Are we on like 5 of 10? I'm just curious.
Oh, mate, it goes on and on and on. that was the low-hanging fruit. So I'll take you to the big one, because we've raised it every year we've come, and it's about delegation, actually. I'll just see if that's one. Well, it's delegation and permissioning. I'll give you the other low-hanging one, signatures. Still being stored in my Windows roaming profile. Changed my machine, deleted the profile. Had to recreate my signature. When are you going to put that in the mailbox? I know it's an OA.
Sorry, you're asking for roaming signatures.
Yep. Yeah. Good, thank you.
Noted.
I'll just keep recreating it.
We have someone typing up here. She got it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you need to be putting it on user voice, too.
I think it's asked every year by like every single person. Surely that's on your hit list. Right. In user voice, it'll go. Right. So delegation.
But by the way, if we fix that, we wouldn't get to see you. True. We just look forward to it every year.
That's true. So the delegation I saw in the web client at your session. Mm-hmm. Everybody here will tell you, and you guys know this, it's a painful experience to delegate your mailbox. And if you delegate it through the Outlook configuration wizard to the delegation window to add someone, you can only share out the inbox. They only get sent on behalf of. So the first thing we always ask is, when can you cascade permissions through my 300 folders to my delegate so they can see all the folders? So when they add the mailbox, they see all my folders. Because that person, I actually want them to do filing for me as well. Like NTFS, you mark it down, you cascade the permissions, it's good. Ironically, if you do share one and then create a folder, they get it. It's inherited. You've heard this before, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I don't have expertise in shared mailboxes.
No, this isn't. I'm sharing my own mailbox. I'm a VIP senior manager, and I'm sharing it with my PA.
Oh, with your calendar? I'm sorry.
No, my whole mailbox. I want to share my whole mailbox with them. I don't want to have to raise a ticket and request full access with send as. I want to be able to delegate my mailbox to this person. Mm-hmm. And they can add it in Outlook, and there's too many ways to add it in Outlook. Open another mailbox, add an account, create another profile, add additional mailbox. That's too many ways, and you get a different behavior for all of them. You get a different OST. Sometimes it goes into your OST. Sometimes it's a separate OST. If you add the account, you can do signatures and rules. If you add as an additional mailbox, you have to share out the root level, then the inbox, then do delegation. It's really terrible experience. And I know it sort of looks like you're working in the web app, but yeah, what's happening in Outlook?
What we announced there was really specifically for calendar. We only tackled half of situation. So
yeah, I think one fair thing though, so every time we come back, we go to the team, we say, you know, whatever, we're gonna consolidate, we're gonna do, but these flows are all very personal to, you know,
one. Well, hang on. You said that last year, actually, and you did ask for a show of hands in the room who was saying what I was describing, and everyone went, yeah.
Yes. What I'm getting at though is what you're seeing for the calendar is a infrastructural investment in being able to take, yes, it's calendar, but being able to take a folder and target it at someone else's mailbox and say, hey, place a copy of this in someone else's mailbox for a ease of use, ease of access. I don't think we're going to stop there. There's nothing to announce, but I mean, I think we understand that calendar sharing is a high friction thing.
Yeah.
And mail sharing is a high friction thing, and contact sharing is a high friction thing, and whatnot. But we can't just go and
Yeah, I get the calendar sharing thing, but also the way the mailbox owner has to do delegation needs to change. It's very convoluted, and you get a different experience doing it too many different ways. And if you're a delegate and you're a PA for multiple managers, you've now got 10 mail files with maybe 10 OSTs, full access, send there, send on behalf. It's still not right.
My guess is what you're asking for is one of the great things we did on the calendar side was instead of having multiple different entry points and a like Unix-style permissions dialogue where you can try and figure it out yourself, we tried to make it scenario-based where we have a menu of like the most common options and it's like pick from one of these five and we try and make those work. My guess is what you're saying is applying that same thinking to the overall delegation end-to-end scenario would be good.
Yeah, I thought I'd really articulate it last time, but yeah, maybe. I know it sounds like you're working on a way of working, and maybe other people will see that as okay. But you know, right now, if I want to give someone full access for senders, I can't do that. I have to ask an administrator to do it. If I want to cascade out all my folders personally, I'm right-clicking and sharing out 300 folders. Just that's not a good experience.
Yep.
Feedback taken. We'll at least compliment you with a terabyte hard drive.
Thank you.
Gigabyte hard drive. Not like, terabyte.
I want one of those.
I'll be very rich if I can come up with that. But thank you. And then you can slide to the back of the line if you'd like to ask a few more. I was joking, actually. No.
I have a 23 on-prem Exchange server, and I'm running 3 separate Outlook clients against it. So.
Sorry, did you say 2003?
No. I'm running 3 separate Outlook clients against it. So the enterprise has Office 2010 deployed. So I have an Outlook 2010 client. I also personally have an Outlook 2013 client and an Outlook 2016 client. The Outlook 2016 client, when I change from mail to calendar, the calendar goes non-responding pretty consistently. On the 2013 client, it's slow to render. The 2010 client is stellar, rock solid. So I'm trying to figure out how can I fix, because they want to go to Office 2013. And the experience that I'm getting off of 2013 is going to create havoc with my business. And I'm trying to figure out where do I start to try and figure out why I'm getting 3 separate behaviors from the 3 different clients.
I would ask to please open a support case so that we can investigate those scenarios. I mean, off the top of my head, I know of 2 different things that are being fixed right now that do affect both 2013 and 2016 that probably cause kind of the thing you're seeing. One of them has to deal with having calendar entries in your inbox and causing a failure in UI automation core.dll. And then there was there's different bugs. I'm just trying to say that we know about a number of different issues like that. As they're coming up, we're addressing them. But it, I mean, if you could open a support case and let us know for sure what those, you know, I want to confirm that the issue that you're seeing is that things that we're already fixing.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, I think the other there's one other big difference starting in 2013, and yes, like everyone will like laugh to themselves or laugh out loud. But the UI in Outlook starting in 2013 and 2016 is hardware accelerated, and you might say, shouldn't it be accelerated then? The issue there is we become more reliant on the display drivers on the device in those situations, and so various vendors make better drivers than other vendors and things like that. So
right.
The other thing you can try.
I am experiencing the black screen on the 2016 client, and so it said disable the hardware accelerator and that will fix this problem. Well, guess what, it doesn't. The client will be stable for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden 3/4 of your mail message will go black. And of course, if you exit Outlook and re-enter it, everything is happy again for about another 20 minutes.
Yep.
But yeah, that sounds like that UI automation core issue that we've seen with a number of large companies. So there's hot fix coming out for it. And there's another bug. The one I was trying to think of has to do with display size. So Outlook tries to remember the size of how you last exited Outlook, and we have a bug in the way it remembers that. And that's something else that's going
but still,
through the hotfix process.
I would say just open a case. Maybe follow up with Gabe afterwards. And you know, he came all this way. Maybe he can try to help that case along.
Yep.
Cool. Thank you.
First off, thanks for holding this panel. This is a really helpful format from a participant's perspective.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I work at a university. We're all in cloud. I have two questions. One is, at a university, we have a lot of self-indulgent people who think that they are the center of the universe. And when clutter was originally introduced, we had to turn it off for everybody because everybody wanted to make sure they didn't get cluttered. And now that Focused Inbox is going to be replacing it, they're wondering, how can I be the focus? And so I'm wondering if there's an autofocus.
So I think if I can boil it down a little bit, I think the question is broadly of, can you control and force things to specifically go to focus? From an administrator perspective, particularly, the answer is yes. So as an admin, you'll be able to set certain senders or certain accounts that you permission correctly that will never go to other. So you'll have those same controls. You have those controls in clutter today. And we'll be sending out, for everyone's information, we'll be sending out a bunch of information both on our Exchange team blog as well as via the Office 365 Admin Center very early in October with the full set of documentation, which will be published on TechNet, but we'll send you links in a couple of the locations as well. So you'll have that information. From a user level, no, but the way...
Oh, that's good, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a user level, no, we're not looking to get that. It's intended to be driven by the recipient, and to work with the recipient, they have the choices, they have the things, they always move to other, always move to focus. They control that, they control how we train the service.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the default is coming from people will show up in focused, coming from machines will show up in other is sort of the default, and then it continues to learn sort of moving forward. Hopefully that helps.
Oh, that's good. And then my second question is more of an Exchange question. We haven't moved any of our lists from on-prem to Office 365 yet. We were planning on moving them as distribution lists, but there's been a lot of hype around groups this week. I went to the group survival guide yesterday, and they're like, by the way, if you have more than 1,000 people, performance degradation, blah, blah, blah. So is it a long-term plan of Microsoft's to obviate distribution lists and replace them with groups, or what's the deal?
I'm not sure we have the right folks to answer that question. I think broadly, yes, is what I've heard, but I think it just may be a matter of priorities and timelines to get there. Mm-hmm. You can still just continue to use distribution lists within Office 365, so if Groups is not providing it for you, I would recommend that is the solution. But I know we're building DL to Groups migration tools and trying to make that just a one-click process.
So that is the direction it sounds like then.
I think broadly, yes. I'm not sure if there will be immediately.
Directly, yes, for sure. And there's other like DL functionality, like nesting DLs that Groups is about to support as well. So the direction for sure is to provide more and more that functionality in Groups and perhaps eventually you know, remove the DL functionality. But that's going to be a long way. It's not something that's going to be done in the next 3, 6 months, or even 1 year.
There's also probably a use case question, which is mostly, like at Microsoft, these gigantic DLs are about announcing things. Hey, you should use this or not this, or hey, we have new printers, you have to scan your badge, you know, whatever. Right. The group's use case is a great bit more collaborative and things like that. So for these giant, you know, DLs where you announce things, I would say the use case probably isn't to collaborate with, 10,000.
So our enterprise list, you'd recommend going with DLs?
And I mean, I'm just a guy who writes client software, but I would say, like, that's the consideration I would use around.
He's not just a guy. He's the guy who writes client software.
Yeah.
Our team's not very big.
The Outlook team.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Great question.
Yes. We're starting to see this issue starting to trickle down to our users. I actually just had an email today where if someone is, you know, just moving their mouse over an email, or if they actually click into an email or even a calendar event, they will get the little pop-up box that will say Microsoft Outlook and it's trying to contact. Now, I did my research on it, and it's more geared towards if it's trying to download an image from a site or something like that, and it's taking too long, that's why it's doing that. But I've also seen it where if you hover over an email, that also happens as well. And it's not always that it's a image that's in the email. Sometimes it can be just a regular URL. But I haven't seen it to where it would, you know, where it's, you know, completely blank and so forth. But I'm starting to see that starting to happen more and more. And it's happening because we have a different flavor of Outlook clients in our environment. So small handful of folks have 2016. Another small handful of folks got 2013. And then the majority of our users have Outlook 2010. Today is the first time I saw the flavor happen in 2010. The other ones happened 2013 and 2016. The only change that we've done in our environment was the fact that we made all of our emails that's coming externally into us, now it's going through our 2016 Exchange environment that we stood up. So just trying to see, have you guys ever seen any things like that? Because when I look at some of the articles, they keep talking about doing this patch, doing that patch, and I'm trying to, you know, gather that information to be able to produce to our team to be able to look at. So have you guys ever seen anything like that happen within the Outlook clients?
Are you online mode or cache mode?
Majority of our guys are cache mode. The ones that have been happening to, they were cache.
Okay. I have seen that myself on rare occasion, depending on what the message is, what properties, you know, we need if you're trying to resolve a recipient or something, not any garden variety recipient, you know, like right. Sometimes recipients or DLs or something, we have to go ask the directory for something. But right. it is usually fairly rare. If you are seeing it for some reason in your environment a lot, I'd follow Gabe's advice from the previous question. Just open a case. And,
right. Yeah, because we did the unclick the automatically download, within the clients. We did that. Then we start thinking, you know, one article said it could have been a network issue. The first person who experienced it just so happened to be my boss.
Yeah, that's what happens, right?
So he was on Wi-Fi. He had a weak Wi-Fi connection. So we were like, okay, that's probably what it is. So he came into the office, hardwired. Shut down his wireless, and then he said it didn't take as long as it normally would, but probably about like a quick 10, 15 seconds, and then it goes away. So these are some of the flavors that we're seeing now.
I mean, there are legacy reasons why we will occasionally do network IO on the main thread of the app, mm-hmm. but it is certainly not our goal for that to happen. All so right. That thing popping up is indicating that there's something that we need to make the app work that isn't in your OST or it isn't, you know, local. And, like I said, if it's hitting you a lot,
then opening a case will mean that we can go figure out, you know, it's typically a property of an of some piece of the, you know, the machine. Right. And so we can say, oh, look, you, I'm gonna absolutely just make something up. Like, you are using some Jabber integration and it's shoving a property on the thing that we don't end up syncing, and every time you draw a person to the screen, we're trying to get their Jabber ID, or whatever, I'm just making something up. But basically, opening a case will let us, a support engineer, get the information over to us, you know, getting hang dumps and logs and things like that, and we can tell you, you know, is this your environment or is it a bug in the product? If it's a bug in the product, we'll fix it.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, guys. Like others have said, thank you for this panel. It's always been really good every year. I've got three questions. Two are about Outlook Mobile, and one is just standard Outlook. In Outlook itself, when you create a meeting invite, you can click the button that says Add Skype for Business Meeting. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking of bringing that to the mobile experience as well?
Yeah, it's already there.
Is it there now?
It's only there for migrated accounts. So.
Oh, yeah. So if your account has been migrated to O365, you'll see it showing up.
Okay, that's cool. Thank you. And we've heard a lot about calendar, using shared calendars and delegate calendars and that sort of thing. On mobile, being able to open another another mailbox or adding a second mailbox that I have full access to, is that a scenario you're looking at adding?
Sorry, could you say that again?
Being able to add additional mailboxes from my tenant that I have access to the mobile client rather than just my own mailbox.
Delegates
or shared.
Yeah, I think
actually. For mailboxes. So kind of to what JJ and Bob said earlier, like, we heard your feedback last year, and we spent almost this entire year trying to re-architect for calendars. And that model we're going to share with the mail team and the contacts team and the task team, you know, with everyone to make sure that what we built for calendar can work for everyone else. So the answer is not right now, but we're hearing your feedback, and we'll definitely look into that.
But the model, and Julia should correct me if I'm wrong, but the model as I understand it is that things which are shared to you long-term will appear kind of in the context of your mailbox. Here's all the things that are shared to me. It's starting with calendars. We'd love for that to go farther. Okay. But it wouldn't be the case that you would say, like, open other users folder or go into some property pages and say, also open this mailbox or whatever. The idea is that it should just work.
Yep.
And so those things will show up.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be good. The last one I've got is when you create a calendar invite and you send it to a distribution list with a large number of members, when those members respond, they all come back as, you know, they get added as explicit attendees. Mm-hmm. If you then want to make a change to that DL, all of a sudden you blow out the maximum number of recipients for the meeting. Is there anything that can be done for that other than don't allow responses?
So we've had a couple of questions around this. Can you share the specific scenario that you had in mind?
This is typically a VIP who has their PA create a, you know, webinar invite, mm-hmm. and they want to know who's attending. Mm-hmm. So they might send it to 3,000-4,000 people. Mm-hmm. And then they decide to actually change the time, or they add more information to the calendar invite. And when they do that, then they find that actually they can't send the update.
Yeah, so one way to do this is to do not request responses.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it for when you're sending to a large DL and you're worried about hitting that maximum recipients.
Okay, so that's the only answer.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So I have a specific issue, and I asked a question earlier, and I don't think I got a good answer, so I'm going to ask it again. I have Outlook 2016 and 2013 clients in my environment, and I have retention policies set on the deleted items and the sent items folder. In Outlook 2016, I cannot see those retention settings when I go to those folders and look at those messages, like it expires in one day or it's been deleted or something like that, that little tip. In Outlook 2013, I can see it. In OWA, I can see it. But Outlook 2016, I cannot see this.
That sounds like a bug to me.
It does. Yeah. So open the case.
Yep, please do.
Okay, thank you.
I'm back again. Hopefully this is nice and easy. Auto mapping from Exchange for full access. It's a great feature. When it was introduced, painful for administrators who didn't put dash false, but we got there. You open it up, so I got full access to a second mailbox. All of that content goes into my OST. If I add the mailbox as a second mailbox using add account, it generates its own OST with all the controls over the OST. So I don't know who's responsible, is the Outlook team or the Exchange team. Could that auto mapping, when it creates, adds the mailbox to my Outlook, Fat Outlook, have its own OST created? Is that a fair feature request?
That is a fair feature request.
Cool. It seems like you were going to deprecate a certain feature. This could be an Exchange question again as well. Set item configuration. I think people know where we're going with this. So I'm, a delegate to a mailbox. I've got them both added in my Outlook client. I do a sent item. Depending on how you configure Outlook, if you don't get it right, that sent item goes into my sent items. So you can do set sent, well, yeah, I know about the PowerShell, but they deprecated it, and then they brought it back, and then they weren't going to have it in. Set sent item configuration sets the sent items in the right place. You still have the problem with deleted items, because deleted items also go into my deleted items, unless you're using the Wastebucket style registry key, but that only works if you're in cache mode, not in non-cache mode. So if you've got Citrix clients, they're a bit, well, it doesn't work. So the whole story around shared access, delegation, sent items and deleted items kind of needs to be better. Is that still a continual work in progress?
Yeah, I can actually take that one. We just did something, it's not fully released yet, but we're working to make it so that when a delegate responds to or sends something from the principal's calendar, it goes into both people's sent items or both people's deleted items. So that's something we're actively working on right now.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah, that wasn't, yeah, okay. But it needs to do for deleted items as well. That's the whole play around that. Mm-hmm. And last one is for Mac guy. Unfortunately, I have to support my wife on her Mac. I don't want to upgrade her to El Capitan because I don't like upgrading Macs. I can't get I don't think Office 16 for Mac is available, or the Link client, for non-latest OS.
We are supporting, I believe, Yosemite, El Capitan, and Sierra.
Okay, she's none of those.
So Yosemite and up.
Right.
That's the minimal OS requirement that we need.
Yeah, I know certainly for the
Spark business. Mavericks had issues, and we had to move away from that. We support...
In
the past, it used to be that when a new version every year would come up, we would just drop the one that was two before, but we're going to keep moving forward. Yosemite and up is going to be the OS requirement.
Okay, so I upgrade her and other people. Okay, that's me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For Outlook Mobile on my Android, this is, my company paid for me to come here, so why don't I ask for my own feature request? You can configure what swipe right or swipe left does, and it's great, but the one thing I wanted to do, it doesn't do, and I've read message boards where it's been requested, but is it on your, are people thinking about just go to the next message? Because the use case I have is I've been in a meeting for 2 hours, I come out, I just want to roll through my messages very quickly without having to go back to the list each time just to see what's going on and then put the phone back in my pocket
We actually had that feature and we had to pull it out. So on Android, we actually had that feature where you could just go through mail after mail after mail and just swipe through on a mail that's open, right?
So yeah, I'm looking at my inbox.
Yeah.
I'd look at the top message. I click on it.
Yeah.
I see them. I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And now I want to swipe the next one without going back to my list and then click swipe back list. You know, it's just more clicks.
I know. We had to take that out because of the focus. I forget exactly the reason why, but it was through the it was a rendering challenge that we had. I'm sorry, I don't remember the details. We actually took that feature out around about this time last year.
So it was there briefly and went away.
Yeah, and it had to go.
I kind of remember. That gels with my vague memory.
Yeah.
So I was, okay, and it's not coming back. It's kind of hopeless.
Yeah, it doesn't
at this point.
On Android. We had to take it out.
Okay.
Sorry. Believe me, if we could do it, we'd do it because Brian actually wants it as well. So our lead engineer, he he used that a lot, and he's very sad too.
Any plans to allow my users to add, edit, delete contacts on Outlook Mobile?
Yeah, so this is something that we're going to be. So we've been spending a lot of time focusing on getting email awesome, and then we're doing very well on calendar. The next component that we're looking at is our people tab, and so we're going to be making that much more useful and effective. And it's going to include looking at things like, okay, how do we more effectively enable our users to manage contacts? So that's something that we're working on over the next 3 to 6 months.
Thank you.
My question is in regard to in-app support. In an enterprise, that's been one of our biggest struggles in our pilot as issues come up, is the inability to kind of tie that back in with Premier support.
Yeah.
We don't have the capability to see what our users, and we just had a recent review, and that was the number one issue coming out of one of the CIO committees, was they really did not like the idea of having the end user have to splinter their support. So I'm curious what steps are being taken and kind of timeline regarding unconsumer model in actually bringing that into enterprise support.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very mixed bag when we talk about in-app support. Some admins like it because it lowers their support burden. Invariably, a lot of the questions that we actually get are kind of entry-level questions. How do I attach an account? How do I log in? I've lost my password. Things like that, stuff that you really don't want to be bothered with. But the reality is there are some situations that are valid. And so how do we tie them together with a Premier support ticket either in app or in our back end systems, or alternatively within around to your account team? So we're aware of the opportunity to improve, but we just haven't got a solution just yet. So it's on our radar. We just haven't figured out a solution yet.
Okay.
I'm actually super curious for what you think the ideal end state would be.
I guess one thing would be at least to be able to, for all tickets that were created in, if it started with in-app, maybe at least a dashboard.
Okay.
So we can start looking at trending data. Because that's what one of the feedback we're getting is my team that supports this is we have no visibility when, and we've got a firestorm happening, and it's impacting actually the pilot's favorability rating because we're not tackling things quick enough.
Okay.
And then that's kind of that state. So at least that first would be
okay.
At least
step one is just to be able to view the data.
And yep. Then the second would probably be for that enterprise level account asking, is it an enterprise question, or if it came from that thread, just don't let them route it through. Let them have to go through our normal support.
It's a basic triage and just split it one or the other. And
yeah, that would be appreciated.
Okay. Well, that's helpful.
I'm going to even just throw something out. Like, would you want your help desk to serve as tier zero?
Yes.
You know, like basically, we can handle this. This we want to escalate into the normal pipeline.
Yeah, it's just following our normal pipeline for end user support. We've got them doing chat support. We've got them doing things to help triage that quick question kind of thing, bounce them.
Yep.
But in this case, when we have to tell them to go back and submit it through the app, getting a lot of feedback on that.
Cool, thank you.
One other is release notes. We think the release notes are cute sometimes inside of Outlook and Android, but they're not very helpful. So just being able to have in that what's new page that Intune has, or if one doesn't exist, we really would appreciate getting. I just got the new 2.5.3 test flight, and it really doesn't tell me what's new or what should I be looking for that was broken.
Yep.
So we can't help you if we don't have that information.
Right, so this is a perennial challenge that we have because we move so fast. We're pushing out builds every week.
Yeah.
And we don't really have a good answer just yet. And then there's also, so we do have a long list of all of the tickets that have been included in a particular build, but that's just, you know, it's inside a baseball type of data that's not really going to help you at all. How to get that effectively out to you guys in a consumable format where it's actually meaningful, and by the time you've actually absorbed it, we're on to the next build.
Yeah.
So I would say out of everything that we do in our delivery train, if you will, that's the one that we've struggled with for the last 18 months, because then not only is it the release notes, but they've also got to go through the translation process as well. And we support 74 different languages. And that's a whole loop unto itself. And by the time that comes back, we're on to the next build. So So we could either slow down the bills come out. No, we're not going
to
do
no,
that.
No, we don't want you to do that. But I guess if there is at least a dirty kind of, I mean, just an kind of for
an
administrators.
Unwashed version?
Yeah, for administrators, not for the consumer side, mm-hmm. where we could at least kind of get a, we can be there right there with you and give feedback.
Yeah.
And that's been really tricky as well, because then we could say, that's really not broken, or yes, that was awesome, and kind of give that constant feedback too.
Yeah, I'll definitely take that back. It's almost on a bi-weekly basis a topic of conversation, and we still haven't come up with something that's going to make everyone happy, but it's something that we're on.
Great.
Hey, also, if you look at other contemporaries in the industry, like they, and not that we would judge, you know, all that, but people, all the people going fast tend to have settled into this kind of very pat two-sentence blurb in their App Store updates, which is, this contains new features and bug fixes.
Yeah.
And like they just...
I know. It's so not helpful now for them either. But
we hold ourselves to a higher bar, and so we want to solve this problem. But there, it is. I bet they're running into the same things. By the time you turn all that data around, it's stale. Or if you want to go, if you go from 2.5.0 to 2.5.5, well, do you get a roll up for that? Do you get, you know, I mean, you don't. So I mean, it's just really
that's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, if you think about translation, that takes anywhere between 24 to 72 hours in itself. So that's a big part of a week. What we are looking at doing, though, more of is actually in-app notifications, where it's like, hey, this is new on larger features. You'll have seen that a couple of times. We're trying to make that more part of our rollout process. So that'll give you a heads up about what's going out. We're aware of the problem. We're still trying to find a solution that scales at the pace that we're going at.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Just got some generic conference room question for you. Is there any changes coming to the room scheduler so that we can actually like use attributes that are of the room rather than just time and name? Like if room is X size, pick it, you know, that type of thing. We can expose those options down to the user.
I don't think we're actively working there.
Yeah, okay. I don't know anything about that.
Okay, because the only feedback I'd put there is it's becoming more and more relevant because we put all these attributes on these rooms, but no one can actually use them. So now I have room names that have parentheses number, parentheses VC for video conference, parentheses Skype enable. I've got room names that are like wider than you can imagine.
Do you work at Microsoft? Because that sounds just like our. Our directory.
I'm fighting this constantly, and I'm trying to keep the names clean. But now I'm dealing with a merger and acquisition problem, so now they want to rebrand all my rooms, and that's chaotic. But the second quick question I've got is, since I'm dealing with a merger and acquisition problem, I went round and round with support on a problem. We're rebranding, we're force rebranding everybody's email address, I was told to, two different tenants. So I've got a different address that's getting re-stamped. It's not being done by Edge.
Yep.
All of the invites that go across the orgs come back as tentative, regardless of if they accept or decline, because of that rewrite. There's something that Outlook's reading in the actual, you know, X headers that says it's like a reply to that's been rewritten, so it knows. So the accepts come back the wrong way, the declines come back the wrong way. Everything comes back as tentative. You look at it in OAuth, and it says it was accepted with tentative. You look at it in Outlook, and it just says they're tentative but accepted.
Yeah, that just sounds like a bug.
I was just going to say, like, I'll let Misma take a note and get that over to the calendaring team. I think the thing that we see is this, like, M&A happening, and actually what we see it more on is divestitures, where two companies split, and then it's like, well, you know, this company owns the rights to foo.com, and this company has to become contoso.com. And so we've had several escalations where we're trying to sort that out because it's a very, getting the routing right, getting the auto discover right, getting the blah, 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 getting that all right requires proxy address stamping and things like that. And so it's an area that we are getting more and more familiar with. And so we'll take that feedback back to, Julie had to go to another thing. So we'll make sure that they get that and we'll think about how that works.
Okay, thanks. That's all I got.
On the Outlook app for Android, when I get a new message notification, I just want to scroll down and just delete the message. My option is archive. I don't have a delete option. So without, because I know it's a junk email and I don't care and I don't want to read it. Right. So is there any chance of giving us the option to configure that like you do with the swipes or?
So we probably won't give you the option to configure, mostly because of what we try to do is with mobile apps in general, you want to keep the options and configurations to a minimum, just have a strong and usable app in the first place. But what we are going to be doing is looking at notifications in its entirety. How do we make them more effective? And we're going to be looking at that in the context of wearables as well. So what sort of notifications are you expecting on your phone? How does that figure into your Apple Watch or your Android Wear? So that's not something we're going to be doing anytime this year, unless an engineer gets some spare time and can squeeze something in. But that's something that we're going to be looking at more seriously probably next year.
All right, thank you.
And real quick, we're at, where are we at?
We have time.
Hello? Yeah, we're at time, so we got three left. Let's take these really quickly, and then we can jump. If we need to keep continuing to answer questions after, we can do so outside the room.
Everyone that they cut us off, man? Oh, there we go. Okay. Everyone that signs my checks uses Macs, and you know, Groups looks like a really best of all collaboration strategies that I've heard so far. So. Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Outlook God.
Thank you. The new one button archive feature, it does not seem to allow you to set it up to archive to an online archive.
Yeah, we've heard that before.
That's correct.
Yeah. Are you working on it?
So I think, are you an on-prem user, Office 365?
I support customers who are both.
Yeah, I think there's a potential long-term effort. Long-term, maybe the wrong word, but like we're looking at potentially just making you have one mailbox and no online archive. The online archive serving the purpose of being an online archive for an on-prem mailbox, rather than being like if your whole mailbox is in the cloud. The concept of having two mailboxes that you can't search across and do other things. You can apply policy within your mailbox to separate folders and separate items. You can do everything you'd want to do in one mailbox. So I think. More broadly, we're actually looking at moving away from that for a cloud mailbox. So I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the gesture. Is basically when you choose the archive folder, that's a property on the mailbox, so all the clients know what folder that is. It also makes it convenient for the system to understand any retention policies you want to place on archives and things like that. It's not set up yet, but that's the direction we're going. Is to say,
our preferred architecture, if you will, that would be like the online archive is something you would potentially move things to more like with retention policies and rules, like on behalf of the user as an admin, not have the user triage things into the online. Right, almost if you run out of mailbox size or after 4 years and the deleted items, it moves there or other things like that, and let the user keep their mailbox or mail in their mailbox, because things like when you go to mobile, when you go to, if you, God forbid, aren't using our mobile apps, but using other email apps, like you can't search across that content, you can't get on the go, all of the rest of our tools only work within your mailbox and don't work in that separate online mailbox. So I think, not for on-prem, but for 365, that would be our preferred route. So.
Well, how is that going to impact people that have on-prem archives where they're setting them individual settings and then you try and move them to the cloud when they're used to having rules set on folders that move them into archive depending on what granularity you've given them?
So I think we're going to have to explore. We're obviously not doing it right now. We're going to have to explore the scenarios for customers moving. Like I'm saying, this is more of, that was statement was, here's what our preferred architecture would be for a cloud mailbox. We're going to set up a cloud mailbox, keep the mail in the mailbox. If you need to move stuff elsewhere for size reasons, because you're passing 50 gigabytes, then use that online archive. We'll have to address those specific transition scenarios if and when we do that. Right, but there's two reasons for an archive. One is retention policies, which in the cloud you can apply those within your mailbox, and the second is storage size. And if we can increase the size of the mailbox, then you also negate that need. So we think if we can do that correctly, we can provide all the reasons and capabilities that you have for an online mailbox, so an online archive within the mailbox. So like I said, there will be other reasons why you potentially wouldn't. And so we'll continue. When we get to delivering that as a solution, we would evaluate those and make sure we provide solutions for them. But
Last question. Quick final question. With the mobile client, is the option of high importance, low importance, priorities, receipts, is that coming in the mobile client anytime soon?
So we get requests for that. Not very many, to be honest with you. So our frame of reference is a little different to the other clients. Usually the types of communication that are happening with an email on mobile are not very long, not very sophisticated, very short shrift bursts. It's like, yeah, I'm running like I just did. Yeah, I'm on a panel, I'm running late. I'll be there in about 10 minutes, tops. You know, people are putting in one sentence or two sentences. So adding lots of bells and whistles to email is not something that's very high on our priorities. It's on our radar. We just haven't got a date just yet.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, everyone, very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.